Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to challenge each other to experiments. You've thought of some. I didn't really. I figured I'm going to use your genius.
Oh, man, so. This is terrible. Terrible, but good.
You know, at first I was really scared to have advertisers. But it's really been actually a nice thing because it tells me that people have valued this podcast enough that advertisers actually want to spread their own message through this. But in order to continue having great advertisers, I need your help. Please go to podsurvey.com/James and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you a little better. That way we can show our advertisers just how great the listeners you guys are. Even if you've taken our show's podcast listener survey before, the current one is brand new and different, so I'd really love for you to take it all over again. Plus, once you've completed the survey, you can enter to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Again, that's podsurvey.com/James, podsurvey.com/James. Thanks for your help. So I'm very excited. Back with AJ Jacobs, we're going to start we're going to experiment with a new format on the James Altucher Show, a little bit of a mini series. I've always been obsessed with AJ's ability to come up with experiments in his life and actually act on them and then change his life and write a book about what happened. So a great example. And by the way, welcome, AJ. Welcome back.
Thank you. I love to be here.
And you know, a great example, of course, is your book, The Know-It-All, where you read the Encyclopedia Britannica A to Z. and then wrote about the result. Another example is the year of living biblically. You spent a whole year living exactly according to the rules of the Bible.
True.
You grew a huge beard. You threw stones at adulterers in Central Park. You wouldn't sit on your wife's chairs when she was having her period. Like, you did all these crazy things in the sake of the Bible. And then you even wrote a book about this, My Life is an Experiment. All these little mini experiments you did. And I'm just fascinated. I think experimenting in our lives is such a great way to free ourselves from the normal conventions of society. I don't know. Did you find this when you were doing these experiments?
Oh, yeah. I think it's very, it makes my life better. Not always at the time. You know, if you're doing an experiment and it's a disaster, then maybe that's not. But the end, the takeaway is it makes it your life better. And it doesn't have to be big experiments. I always, you know, you can try a different toothpaste every week and see, because we are stuck in these routines and these ruts that we just take for granted. Like, why did I brush with Crest toothpaste for, you know, 30 years?
Me too.
That's what you use?
Yeah.
I switched, though. I've switched.
Because I did all through my childhood, college, graduates, my first 15 years of work, only Crest.
And
now I switch.
What do you got now?
Now I use Sensodyne.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think there's more technology in toothpaste now. So we're like, and there's less influence from TV advertising because I don't watch regular TV anymore.
Right.
So I don't need to, 4 out of 5 dentists recommend Crest. I'm with the fifth guy.
Well, I've used Crest because some kid in my camp when I was 11 used Crest and he seemed cool. So I'm like, all right. And I just never thought about it. But I'm like, you know what? I do this twice a day, every day. Maybe I should put some thought into what's the best toothpaste. And I tried all these different ones. And I actually use Tom's of Maine. I like the cinnamon because it's all about the taste for me. All toothpastes are pretty much equal. They're all going to protect you as long as they got that ADA. But I'm like, you know what? I want it to taste good. I don't...
Tom's is good for the breath?
Yeah, I don't even think about the breath. It's just like while I'm brushing, what does it taste like? And it's like, yeah, it's just not bad. This is like a little dessert.
So I want to describe the format of this. We're going to do kind of a mini series where we challenge each other to an experiment.
Right.
We do the experiment, and whether it's a week or a month or whenever later, we'll come back here, report on the results of the experiment, and then challenge each other to the next experiment.
Exactly.
And we'll do this
that.
For as long as we can. Well, at least
now,
a couple
episodes.
Now, are we
going to both do the same experiment?
I think we should.
I think so, too.
Yeah, just to compare.
Right.
And then I think also it allows us to, it pushes us not to slack off because you'll know what it takes to do the experiment right. And so you'll know if I'm slacking off and vice versa.
Right.
And I'm intrigued by your ability to almost look at anything and sort of see if it's an experiment or not. And I've been fascinated by your ability to create entire worlds and businesses and books and everything out of these experiments. Like your experiment to kind of map the whole family tree of the world resulted in, you know, the world's largest family reunion. It built this huge...
With James Altucher, a star speaker.
I was a speaker. I was speaking right next to world-famous genomics guy. What was George Church?
George Church, yeah. He's amazing.
When I registered for the world's largest family reunion, Dr. Oz was standing right next to me. I should have introduced myself. It was such a fascinating thing to go to, and I brought my kids to it, so it was a bonding moment. But that's an experiment that's changed lives. Like, that was a whole party out there. And it was just fascinating to me.
Thank you,
I mean, I knew people who flew up from like Florida to come to it and all these other states. And I'm sure you had people from other countries come to it. And then you had the family reunion happening live in other countries as well.
Mm.
So I think that was the world record you broke, right?
Right, exactly. There were 40 simultaneous family reunions around the world with like 10,000 people.
And everybody was mapped out, like how they were in the family tree.
Exactly.
So, and we're third cousins, of course. So I was happy to belong and I felt like I belonged. But,
you do.
I really like the idea of doing, trying different experiments to A, see if they could take me, you know, kind of widen my comfort zone and B, perhaps make me a better person. Like,
right.
I feel like your books have made you a better person, and we've discussed this in the past.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I needed a lot of work. You know, I'm a fixer-upper, so...
We all are.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And do you want to get into some of the ideas for experiments?
First, I want to hear about something you mentioned right before we started, which is that you did some experiment with one of my favorite stand-up comedians, Jim Gaffigan.
Oh, yeah.
What was that about?
I loved working with him. He's a great. The idea was I was researching and I found the oldest jokes in the world, like from 2500 BC Sumeria or 600 BC Greece and Rome.
What's the oldest joke in the world? And I feel like I've heard you talking about this before. Or you know what? You mentioned this on Question of the Day, I think, when you were a guest host there. But what's the oldest joke in the world?
This is the oldest recorded joke. Are you ready? Do
yes.
you have any water in your mouth? I don't want you to spit it all over the microphone.
No, I'm clean.
Okay, here it is. What has never happened since time immemorial?
What?
A new wife has never sat on her husband's lap and not farted.
That's the oldest joke in the world.
That's the old, and it's a little confusing with all the knots, but the basic idea.
A lot of double negatives. But I get it.
The idea is like when you get married, your wife starts farting around you all the time. That's basically, it's sort of like.
Before that, she was holding it in.
Right.
Now she could just let go.
So, yeah, it says a lot about humans that the first joke ever was a fart joke.
And it also says a lot about divorce laws. People didn't get divorced back then. Now they get divorced. Not that people get divorced over farting, but. People still have to be on guard. You have to be on best behavior all the time.
Right, that's true.
Never ends now.
That's right. It's much harder.
So okay, you found the oldest jokes in the world.
And then we had Jim agreed to go to Gotham Comedy Club and tell these oldest jokes without telling the audience that they were from 600 BC to see, are jokes eternal or do they age out? Like, is there some secret to everlasting humor, or is it just the fresh stuff always works? So it was interesting. I mean, the one thing we learned is he is such a brilliant comedian that his delivery is so good that he could sell a joke from 600 BC Sumeria and still make people laugh.
Like, how would he do it a little differently than you just told me? I got it. It was funny when you said it. But, I'm sure he could do it in such a way that's just insane.
Right. Well, one thing is he turned it to himself. So one of the oldest jokes, this is the way he told it, is, I have a barber who's very talkative and he's always yapping in my ear. So I went to him and he said, how would you like your hair done? And he said, in silence. And that is the oldest joke, but it's told as a man went to a barber and the barber was very talkative. So he turned it on himself to make himself the star, which I think makes it more, gives it more punch.
And there again, it's this element of humor where you remove part of yourself to make it funny. So he removed, obviously Jim Gaffigan's a very polite human being. He probably wouldn't say that to his barber.
Right.
He removed that part of himself, and that's what makes it funny, is that he was then, very rude to his barber.
Right, exactly, and surprising. Also, there are some jokes, I guess, he couldn't sell, because there were, back in the, before Christ, eunuch jokes were huge. People love to make fun of eunuchs.
So what couldn't he sell in that? Was the audience like, what the heck is he doing?
Yeah, he would be like, he's like, people, it's too hard to explain. You can't, once you start explaining a joke, you're dead. And he thought that people would have to explain what a eunuch is, someone without testicles. Because the jokes were like, did you hear about the eunuch who got a hernia? Or something like, he had no balls, and then he still got penis problems.
And so, wait, did he explain what a eunuch was, or did he just?
He didn't even try that one.
He didn't try that one.
I
think that
limits.
Would be funny because it's just so ridiculous that he would be telling that joke that people would laugh.
Exactly. But I loved it, and I loved that he did it and tried
it out.
Did
you videotape it? It almost could be like this weird kind of alternative
comedy
special.
We were supposed to have a video, but somehow the videographer didn't show up. But we do have the tape. We have the full tape.
Ah, that's a shame you don't have the video.
I know. I actually thought maybe it would be interesting. Like, that could be a comedian's whole shtick, is that he goes up and tells 2,000-year-old jokes.
How did you convince him to do that?
Well, we just emailed him out of the blue.
When you say we, who's we?
This is a producer at NPR named Peter Breslow, great producer. But I think if you have, like you know, if you have an interesting idea that will appeal to them and make their life better, you have a much better shot. Because it's not just, you know, come on my show and, you know, talk about yourself. This was an interesting idea that he wanted to know, like, do ancient jokes still hold up?
He being Jim.
Jim wanted to know.
So you pitched this to NPR first, or how?
First, I pitched it to NPR, and then NPR pitched it to Jim Gaffigan.
And when you pitched it to NPR, did you have Jim Gaffigan in mind, or did you say, let's get a professional comedian to try this?
Yeah, the latter. I just said, let's get a professional comedian.
And this guy knew Jim Gaffigan and said, this is a perfect choice. And because he's so family friendly and clean, like, he's kind of got a brand that,
right,
that it's interesting to see him with these kind of, I don't know, that somehow makes it a little more interesting to me.
Right.
As opposed to like Louis C.K. telling a joke about a eunuch.
That's true. Yeah, it was, he was the perfect person to do it. And the other thing we learned is that just references are so fleeting. Like, a lot of these jokes from 600 B.C. are about lettuce, which apparently was an aphrodisiac. They thought lettuce was in it. So there are all these dirty jokes about lettuce. And those are kind of hard to translate.
So how would he translate them?
Well, those he didn't even try. But interestingly, he has a lot of jokes about lettuce in his act.
Oh, yeah. His book, Food.
Right. Yeah. But not as an aphrodisiac.
And so he could have maybe used a different known aphrodisiac. I don't know what's a known aphrodisiac, chocolate or whatever. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes he would update it, like he put in Donald Trump in one joke. I think the joke was something like, did you hear about... The ancient version is to hear about the miser who made himself his own heir in his will. So not hilarious. But then Gaffigan turned it into Trump. Did you hear about the latest with Trump? He's so ridiculous. He made himself his own heir. And it didn't do great, but it is certainly better than...
And did he explain the concept to the audience afterwards?
No, never.
Wow. So that's really kind of committing to the act.
I know. I love it. He was a scientist. He was like, I'm going to do it. I mean, he's so successful that I guess he can, he's okay with looking like a fool. Like we were talking about on that other episode, sometimes for the sake of the show, you know, it's good to look like an idiot. I do it all the time. I'm very good at making myself look
And I've talked about this before with, do you know John Max? He wrote Jay Leno's monologue for 20 years, the entire run of The Tonight Show. He wrote many of the jokes. He wrote about 500,000 jokes for the monologue.
Wow, and that's nuts.
He said critical is that the comedian has to commit right up until the very end. Like, there's no backing off. Like, you can't explain it afterwards.
Right,
you gotta commit,
right.
And then you move on.
I know, it's true. I mean, I am always so admiring of people who commit completely. Will Ferrell, I think, is so good at that.
Yeah, Will Ferrell is very good. Because also that brand of like physical humor too, where you kind of have to like literally throw yourself into the into the humor. But okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to challenge each other to experiments. You've thought of some. I didn't really. I figured I'm going to use your genius for this first one on experiments. I mean, I came up with some ideas, but they're not quite as interesting, I think, as yours. I'll tell you my ideas after you tell me yours.
Well, I do want to...
You show yours first, then I'll show you mine.
Sure, you'll show yours. Well, one I want to talk about, because I brought it up right before you started recording, and I found your response so interesting, is this idea of not saying anything negative about other people. And I tried this for my Bible book, and it was fascinating because I realized, you know, 70% of my speech was sort of trash talking. And it made such a difference in my life when I cut that out, because it made me more positive and happier not to be trash talking people all the time. So I brought that up, and your response was very interesting to me, which is that you already try to practice that.
Yeah, I make it a point. I really try really hard, and it's not the easiest thing because so many things come up during the day, but I try very hard never to say anything bad about anybody or never to gossip.
And so, when did you start that? Do you remember? Was there a moment where you're like, I'm going to
I think around 2010 or 2011, because maybe I had read something about it, or I just didn't want to be, I just want to live a healthy life. And for me, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to go to the gym every day. That's something very hard for me. But I can control what comes out of my mouth as much as possible. And I just think if you're engaged, you know, it's like if you're eating trash, you're going to feel bad. And it's same thing, if you put trash in your brain's going to go bad. And so I think gossip or thinking hateful thoughts about people, you know, it's like your genealogy project. You know, we're ultimately all related, but in some ways we're also metaphorically related. We're all going through hard times. So if someone's, let's say, obscenely mean or rude to me, maybe they had a bad day, maybe their wife or husband just cheated on them,
right?
Maybe they're lost their job or they're going broke or they're anxious about something. So I don't know, and it's none of my business. And even what they think about me, let's say they're very rude to me, it really has more to do with what's going on in their life than what's going on in my life, because they don't really know what's going on in my life either. So I try very hard never to say anything bad about anybody. And also, look, there's plenty of bad things people can say about me. So I know if I'm saying bad things about people, more than likely they're saying bad things about me. So
right.
I in general, that's been a practice of mine.
That's great. Because I think, yeah, in one sense, it seems like you're this big self-sacrificer. But in another sense, it's just very selfish because you do feel better. And I remember...
Well, one way to relieve stress is... You know, when we're feeling stress, we might feel somehow that we're going to get thrown out of the tribe, you know. And one way to relieve that stress is to feel superior over somebody. So our rank in the tribe goes up. And the best way to feel superior over someone is to trash talk them.
Right. That's so true.
So it's a negative way to kind of relieve stress. And
right.
So I try to avoid those, but it's difficult.
I remember Richard Branson, CEO of Virgin, right before the election, he talked about his lunch with Donald Trump. Did you read about that?
Yes.
And how Donald Trump spent the whole time saying, here are the five people who wronged me, and I'm going to devote my life to destroying them. And Richard Branson is like, that is not a healthy way to go through life. And I'm on Richard Branson's side. That is just going to not make you happy. You know.
Well, it's so funny, like, particularly when you get in the realm of rich people, like obviously they're not just rich, they're billionaires, they're well beyond wealthy. And you always wonder, why do they keep doing what they're doing after the first 10 million, really? Why do they, or after the first couple million, why do they keep doing what they're doing? But they do. They're very competitive people. So I've even heard examples of someone world famous worth $2 billion trashing Larry Page because Larry Page was worth $18 billion. And so he couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at that level, those, you know, the need to feel at the top is very important to them and very stressful when they're not.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. Well, here's one idea that we have to talk it through, because it could be a total disaster and get us in some legal problems.
Sounds like a good premise. Let's do it.
All right, well, I've read a lot of research. When I was writing the book about health, a lot of research is about the underappreciated value of human touch, and that it is such an important part of stress relief is just touching others, skin-to-skin contact. If you hold hands with your spouse or your girlfriend or boyfriend, your stress hormones go way down. There was even a study that showed if you hold hands with a stranger, then your stress hormones go down. Just the skin. To me, my stress hormones would go through the roof if I'm holding hands, because I'm like, you know, what are they gonna, you know, they're gonna punch
me
in the face.
I can't even, like, picturing it seems very stressful to me, because there's asking. Finding a stranger, going up to them and asking and kind of, and you can explain the whole premise why you're doing it.
Right.
But then there's like, what do you do once you're holding hands with them?
Yes, I know. That was an odd part of the experiment. But I do believe the central premise, which is that human touch is underappreciated. We were meant to touch each other, and we don't in this. And this is, it's a hard premise for me to accept because I am very standoffish. I never used to like hugs.
Yeah, I don't like hugs. I don't like shaking hands.
Right.
I don't like when you meet someone, like a woman you know, you have to do the kiss on the cheek. I never know what to do. I wish I could just sort of just nod my head hello.
Right. I'm with you. Or the Japanese, the bowing.
Yeah.
But maybe there is something in seeing if human touch can improve our lives. And I say it's dangerous because you're looking terrified.
I am looking terrified.
You're looking like so uncomfortable.
Like on my face is frozen thinking about it.
I love that look.
I kind of think, though, this means we have to do this one, but go ahead.
Well, as I say, it's a very tricky one because what's the line between affection and touching humans to feel better and, like, you know, just creepiness and sexual harassment.
So a couple questions. One is, do you think this is, you know the company Lyft, it's the car service company that's like Uber?
Sure.
So they do, I've never been in a Lyft, but I hear they do a fist bump when you get in the car. The driver and the passenger has to do a fist bump. And I wonder if this is related, like the physical touch makes you more likely maybe to enjoy the ride or a tip or whatever. I don't know.
Well, I have seen, I've seen studies about waiters who touch the customers get higher tips. And I always find it so annoying and offensive when a waiter touches me. But maybe there's something unconscious about it, which... I remember interviewing... I interviewed Chrissy Teigen, the supermodel. You remember we talked about?
Yes.
And she was the touchy-feeliest person
in
the world.
You're kidding. So in the interview, she would, like, touch you.
She would, like, grab my arm, and she would, like... you know, put her arm around my shoulder. And, you know, she's a supermodel, so I'm not going to complain. Like, if I did that...
Did you touch her back?
I did not.
Was John Legend in the room? Isn't she married to John Legend?
Yeah, she's married to John Legend. Yeah, he was not there, but still I felt it was not my place to touch her. And again, it's weirder as a man, you know, touching women. It's not as accepted. So how do we negotiate this? And how... because I do feel... there's something very stress relieving, very comforting about hugging, and yet at the same time I hate it. I hate the idea of it. So that to me is an interesting experiment because it's going to be uncomfortable, but it might yield something useful.
Let's stop to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Every podcast I do is so personal and special to me. The podcast is all about how people can be better performers, even peak performers, at whatever it is they're passionate about. So help people discover this podcast. Help me, help the listeners. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can also check out the show notes at jamesaltucher.com/podcast. And also, if you want to get my blog updates and other updates that I do, sign up for the newsletter at jamesaltucher.com. Once again, thanks so much for joining me on the journey of this podcast. You know the comedian Gary Goldman? He's also been on my podcast as well. Oh. And he has a joke about Trader Joe's. Very funny joke. It's like a 15-minute joke. He goes on and on, kind of lots of callbacks to different jokes. But in one of the jokes, he talks in the podcast about how, in my show with him, about how he's depressed. And then he does this joke about Trader Joe's and how they always touch you at Trader Joe's. And he said, because the same thing you just said is because it makes people feel better. So that they want your shopping experience to feel good, and touch is a part of that.
Interesting. I just remembered, you know, another person you've had on the podcast, Gretchen Rubin, didn't you ever? She talks
twice
about her in her book, her first book about happiness, that she made sure to hug her husband for 7 seconds because that was somehow the scientifically proven minimum amount of time to kick in the endorphins or whatever.
Right, like I remember her talking about that, the 7 second hug.
Yeah,
and then I think I tried that for a few days afterwards and then I forgot because I always forget
right.
the podcast afterwards. But that's a good thing to remember. Okay, so what's the experiment we should try about this? And then let's think about it for a second whether yes. we're too scared to do it.
Well, that's the other thing is like, yeah, how do we pull this off without being creepy? I mean, I can...
So is it a stranger? So I would say to really make the experiment worthwhile, it's some kind of touch with... So the basic level is some kind of touch with any person. But
yes.
then that's too easy because you could just go to girlfriend, wife, or your child, or friends, or whatever, and say, hey, I'm doing this experiment. Can I touch your shoulder or whatever? So I think you have to make it more restrictive.
Agree. Well, I think there are two elements to the experiment. I think we can increase our touch with our loved ones. So, you know, I don't hug my wife really ever. Not ever, but like on an average day, I'm not going to go up and like she comes home and I give her a big hug. I'm just like, hey, honey.
I still think that's the easy way out.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
if you did that,
that's just
great.
Part one.
Yeah.
That's just part one. But I do think it's an important element is to increase the touch with loved ones. But then the more interesting part, I think, is to increase touch with acquaintances, coworkers, and strangers. So how do we do that? Do we, like, is it number of hugs? Is it number of seconds of hugs? How should we, like, say you have to hug 10 strangers a
okay,
day?
Okay, well, let's take an extreme.
Okay.
Let's say the experiment is you have to hold hands for at least 30 seconds with someone you've never spoken to before. So, in other words, a stranger.
Oh, this is horrible. This is just
Is that possible?
It's possible, but it just fills me with
because some
fear.
Days I don't even leave the house. So
right.
how am I going to do it?
Oh, that's interesting.
So maybe it doesn't happen. Maybe it's the days you leave the house.
Okay, yeah.
But is that doable or is that too much?
So it would be 30 seconds a day.
I mean, you've thrown rocks at strangers in Central Park for adultery. So how could this be too much for you to hold hands with a stranger?
Oh, man, that's so weird and creepy. So is it that... you have to hold hands with one person for 30 seconds, or you can hold like with two strangers' hands for 15 seconds.
I guess that's fine too, because that's probably even harder than holding hands with one stranger for 30 seconds.
Right. What if, and does it have to be holding hands, or is hugging acceptable? Like, what are the ways of physical contact?
I feel like hugging is also too easy. And again, maybe hugging is what we settle down on. I'm just taking the most extreme. I feel hugging's also too easy because there's almost these kind of cultural norms that you can go up to someone and say, hey, I need a hug, or you look like you need a hug. Can I hug you?
Mm.
It's a little easier. Holding hands is weird. So
okay,
so
let's
to
try.
Hold hands is like a weird thing, and it
your
has to be someone.
Your producers are horrified, they're
and it has to be someone.
Head.
And but I don't know if this is the experiment because maybe I can't do it. Maybe this is too scary. But it has to be with someone you've never spoken to before.
Well, you have to speak to them before grabbing their hand,
right,
or else
right.
you'll get arrested. Right?
Right. So you have to. You can go up to them and say, "Hey." So okay, do you explain the experiment, or
right,
or
explain,
so that's the other factor?
That's
do you explain the experiment, or do you say, "Can I hold your hand?"
I think we should try it both ways. I think we should try it several ways. I think we should try to, yes, hold hands, set the bar high, hold hands with strangers that you've never spoken to, but also increase your hand-holding with acquaintances, colleagues, and loved ones. And hugs, too. Throw them in there.
Okay, but I do really insist it's got to be strangers.
Yeah.
Because I think with colleagues, it's just too easy. Like, with coworkers...
It's not easy. It's awkward. It's like, it's possible lawsuits.
Yeah, but if you explain to them the experiment...
But still, like, if I were a woman and, like, some... Not that we're incredibly powerful, but if someone came up to me and was like, I'm doing this experiment, I really need to hold your hand, they'd be like, what the... I can see, like, a Dove Charney-like lawsuit in the future.
Okay, so, again, this is why I think people you've never spoken to before is better than colleagues.
Okay.
Because... They're not going to sue you for any kind of harassment, or they're not going to think you're personally... If a stranger thinks you're personally weird, that's also a kind of an interesting experiment to be able to deal with that.
Right.
Uh, The other thing is, I think it needs to be 50-50 men, women.
Agree. That's a good point.
And yeah, it can't be just hugs. It's got to be holding hands.
All right. I'm
with you. I'm taking the extreme, what I think this experiment should be. Then the question is, should we do it or not, or just talk about the next experiment? Do you think you could do it?
I do. I think it'll be awkward, but it'll be interesting, and I would like to do it. I think that I'll need to, like, you know, drink a glass of whiskey, a little Dutch courage before going out, but I want to try it. I do. I am ready to commit, but if you want to do something
else. Okay, but like, let's say you're holding hands with a guy and you're straight. I know your wife. Are you, you know, and usually it's again, we always get back to comedians, but I forget which comedian it was. I think it's Louis C.K. Being straight is like the one kind of sexual designation that everybody absolutely wants people to know they are. So like, straight people want other people to know they're straight.
Right.
So when you're holding hands with a guy and you don't quite explain everything, they're going to think you maybe are not straight. And so you have to be okay with that also.
Of course. I'm okay with. I'm not, you know, what I'm worried about is actually getting punched in the face, or I can deal with, like, it's going to be a lot of social awkwardness, which is horrible in the moment, but also very interesting looking back on it and analyzing what this was like. So, yeah, I'm for it.
Okay, I'm terrified, and I'll tell you why I'm terrified. I did, a few months ago, I was doing a photograph of the day, and I don't know, have you ever been on Chase Jarvis's Creative Live?
I have not, no.
Chase is a professional photographer, and I asked him for advice. I'm not a photographer, I've never really taken a photograph. How can I right now take a great photograph within the next hour after I leave this interview? And he said, find what your filter is, like what kind of things are you interested in looking at? And I said, I like sad people. And he said, go up to a sad person, explain what you're doing, and take their photograph. And so I did this, but even that was terrifying for me, to walk up to people and talk to them.
Did you explain, what did you say when you walked up to them? Did you say, you look sad and I want
to? No, I said, you looked interesting, yeah, and I'd love to take your photograph. And I would ask them some questions and get a story out of them. So I know I can build a story out of people. So I basically paired my storytelling with a photograph, and I think it worked out well, and I got better and better. But it was still terrifying. And this is even more, and so that's why I'm even more terrified, because
it is.
Because I really hate touch. I've even written about this, how much I hate hugs.
Right. And then there's the whole journey.
I never got hugged as a child. Ah, my parents didn't hug me.
I'll
no
hug
one
you.
Touched
I'll
me.
Hug you.
So
we're gonna touch a lot at the end of this episode.
So how long do you think? I mean, we'll see how long the experiment goes. Let's just try and see and see how it goes.
All right, I'm ready. Well, it also reminds me of, you know, sometimes in these experiments, you just have to pretend you're like almost like an actor, like you're a method actor, and really just go out there and just be fearless and unafraid of consequences.
Well, that's just it. You kind of have to almost put on a persona.
A persona,
like,
right.
Like one time, like with this photograph of the day, one time I went up to the biggest guy on the street in the middle of the night. Like, this guy was ripped in every way and was 8 feet tall. And I went right up to him. It was like 2 a.m. And I said, I'm going to kick your ass. And And of course, he looked at me, you know, tinier glasses, whatever. And he just started laughing. And then we got a photograph.
Wow.
So
that was bold.
But I had to be like an actor. I had to be like a method actor to do that. So it's the same thing here, I feel.
Exactly. And I've had that experience many times. Like, I am. You know, for the Bible book, I would put on the robe and sandals and a beard and the stick. Or another one, I did an experiment where I tried to be the most rational person alive and try to ignore irrational societal norms. So, for instance, you know, when you're at the beach and it's hot, you take off your shirt, right? So why not in the subway? If you're equally hot, why is it that you have to keep your shirt on? So I was like, hot in the subway, so I took off my shirt and it's bare-chested, and it was really awkward.
I almost feel like that experiment, I would have immediately, even though I hate the thought of it, like I don't even like to take off my shirt at the beach, but I immediately would think, okay, that is better than
touching people. And I would agree. I would agree 100% to try that one in the subway. I don't even like going
to
the subway.
Right. That's much easier than the one we're about to embark on.
So let's do this because I think discomfort is is okay. And as far as uncomfortable things go, this is like nothing compared to, like, let's say going to jail or going to surgery or whatever, you know, so everything's relative. And let's try it and see what happens.
I'm excited, and hopefully we will not, you know, get lawsuits. Does your insurance for the podcast cover any, like, workers' comp if I get...
I don't think so. So maybe somebody will sue. This disgusting guy hugged me, and he clearly didn't shower in weeks, and I'm traumatized by it now.
Oh, man, so. This is terrible. But yeah, terrible but good. I mean, there's
what are other easy way outs here? Now it's part of the strategy here is almost gaming it so it becomes as comfortable as possible. Mm-hmm. So I think the challenge is to not game it so much.
Exactly.
You should call me out if I game it too much. Like if I stand by a corner and just wait for little old ladies, like, oh, hey, can I help you cross the street? That's gaming it a little
right.
bit.
Right. And you don't want to always, it's okay sometimes to explain this as an experiment. But let's see, sometimes just don't explain it and see how that goes.
I don't even know how I would begin to ask a guy if I can hold your hand for 30 seconds.
Oh, man.
But we'll try.
We'll try. It's going to be, that's why it's an experiment. That's why it's an experiment. All right. I love it. All right. Give me a hug. Come on.
Well, no, you're not a stranger.
Then hold my hand.
So that's it.
Next time on the James Altucher Show.
At the end of the 70s, my band broke up. What am I going to do? Nobody likes my songs. I got nothing going for me. So instead of playing guitar and telling jokes, I started telling jokes and playing guitar. I never learned jokes to be a comic. I learned jokes because they were a lot of fun and made me popular. I was always the last guy at a party, the last guy telling jokes, the last man standing. You got a joke, he's got a joke, I got five. You got a joke, he got a joke, I got six. And I would always listen to people because I might get a new joke out of it.
What do you like about jokes? And by a joke, you're like, it's like classic joke telling. Here's the premise, here's the punchline, boom.
I tell jokes because I love to make people laugh. Because comedy and humor comes from tension. And poop and sex sets up more tension than anything else. And I like to tell a joke that was like punch you in the stomach and make you scream. I'm not a comedian. I'm a joke teller.
But Jackie, what you did was you basically, no one was going to choose you and say, this is the next great comedian. But what you did was you chose yourself. Hey, I am so glad you listened to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Please take a moment to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you get your podcasts. It will only take you a second, but it will help other people discover the podcast. And my goal is to share this great content with as many people as possible. To see the show notes, just head on over to jamesaltucher.com/podcast. While you are there, you can join my free insiders list to get notified when I post a new podcast. Every day, I also share my best and most controversial ideas. You won't get this stuff anywhere else. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.